with live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Glink. If you're not signed up for the free weekly newsletter, you are really missing out, because all kinds of great information about the Equifax Finance blog, my blog called Spaces on Yahoo, and my CBS News blog, all of that is available through the free weekly newsletter. And you get to find out about really cool things we're doing, like this new webinar series, The Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. You can buy it on my website, thinklink.com. Just click on the red house. It'll take you to a page that explains all about it, how cool it is, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. And then you can buy it and then have it, watch it, learn from it, go out and become a real estate mogul. That's really what I want you to do. We have a lot of really cool stuff to talk about today. A lot of it's going to be investing in real estate. I've got coming up a little bit later on in the show, Ricky Novak, who's a real estate lawyer who runs a 1031 tax-free exchange company. That's a great thing to talk about, so we'll do that. And then Andy Heller, another real estate investor, return visitor to the show. He's going to be on as well, talking a little bit later about his latest investing, let's just say, successes and mistakes, what's going on in the ground in the Atlanta metropolitan area. If you're investing in real estate, he's got some great ideas for you as well for buy, lease, and hold, or hold and lease with an option. I don't know. He'll be around in a little while to explain it. And, of course, we've got Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy coming up. So, busy show. Glad to have you on board with it. I wanted to spend some time with you today talking, at least to start out, a little bit about real estate agents and brokers and developers who are telling me that the market is really hot in most places right now. Even around Atlanta, I'm hearing from a whole bunch of different real estate agents who are saying that, you know, they really can't find enough for their people to buy, and what they found is getting picked over, or there are bidding wars against it. So hot, hot, hot. That is, it's not just the temperature, it's really the temperature of the real estate market at the moment. Houses in good neighborhoods with great schools being snapped up, and clearly sellers are getting more than they were asking for because we're seeing bidding wars, so that's good. Developers are bemoaning how little land is for sale. A couple of weeks ago on the show, we had a guy call in to say that he had bought some acreage, 3 or 4 acres, I don't know where it was, about an hour or so out of Atlanta, and he had bought it for a pretty low price and now was thinking about trying to build houses. He wanted to get a loan to build the houses. I'm thinking developers are going to hear that this property is for sale and they're going to be knocking on his door and they're just going to want to buy the land from him outright. And maybe that's enough of a profit, right? If somebody comes and offers you twice what you paid, 100% appreciation, you might want to say yes. That's what I'm thinking. You might want to say yes. So, not enough houses to go around. The National Association of Realtors had a new study that came out. They said that sales are slowing because there aren't enough houses to go around. After 6 really long years, right? This sounds like a dream come true, because sellers whose houses haven't been appraising out are finally getting a chance to shine, right? Well, sort of. I am a little bit, I'm more than a little bit worried about another bubble, and so are some other people as well. So we've got mortgage interest rates, which are so low. They've just fell to new historic lows in the last few weeks. Buyers are developing just enough confidence that they can jump back into the real estate market, and investors are all too confident of the quick flip. This is the definition of a perfect storm, right? Because whenever there are quick profits to be had, there are going to be investors swooping in for the kill, driving up the price, and people who want to live in the house, or as we say, owner-occupied, that's the parlance of the real estate industry, the mortgage industry. The number of people applying for owner-occupied mortgages really isn't budging. It's not moving up. What we're seeing are investors with cash coming in and buying out these houses. And this is just not long-term success for the housing market. It's short-term success, right? Not long-term success. Long-term success is when investors account for about 6% of the market, and real estate, people living in property, right, second homes, vacation homes, whatever, that accounts for most of it. And investors right now are accounting for 24-25% of the market. So it's really the wrong mix. But that said, there are some amazing deals and opportunities to be had, which is why I've created my Intentional Investor webinar series, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. And I did this because there are so many people asking questions about how to get in on the investing business. How do you become a real estate investor? And so what I've done is take you through step by step exactly where I think you need to be. The thinking that goes behind it. What do you need to understand when putting together your home buying team? What do you need to understand about how the numbers work? What is it that you have to understand about the ins and the outs of making this kind of a decision? And what is it like to even be a landlord? I also share my own mistakes, right? So the Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate, it takes the place of a day-long seminar. I decided, I love seminars, and we're going to do more of them. But you come and you go, and then it's not tangible, right? What you heard, what you experienced, what we're talking about. Here, it's really tangible. It's 2.5 hours of information. You can watch it over and over again. So I encourage you, if you're at all interested in investing in real estate, to go to my website, click on the red house, and decide whether you want to learn how to be wildly successful. So when we talk about rebuilding America and rebuilding Atlanta, rebuilding Chicago, rebuilding San Francisco, all these different places, right? When we talk about rebuilding America one house at a time, what I don't want to talk about, what I get worried about, is that this quick flip, this quick home price appreciation of 9% year over year, it's so not sustainable, folks. There is no way we could sustain 9% per year, month in and month out, right, on an annualized basis. Just can't. And I don't think when our income is pretty flat that we can continue to spend at the level that we're spending at, especially if you look at what's going on around the world. Like, we've got Spain, where now almost a third of all people are unemployed. You've got Europe that's in the grips of a really tough recession. We've got slowing growth in China and Asia. We've got sort of mixed growth in Latin America. It's really hard to be the only place in the world that, you know, everybody wants to come to. And we're really on the rocks here, right? It looks like we're pushing ahead. It looks like things are getting better. I want to believe it's getting better. I'm just a little bit nervous. And so when we talk about rebuilding, what I mean by rebuilding is you have to be ready to rebuild yourself and your financial life before you can start to help your neighborhood rebuild, your city rebuild, your state rebuild, the county, the country, right? It's about rebuilding you and getting you ready for your next step, whether that's becoming a real estate investor, or it's paying down your debt, or it's going through the foreclosure process. Believe it or not, home values are rising. This is really good news for a lot of people, but so many Americans are underwater still. Like 22% of everybody with a mortgage is underwater. Their houses are worth less than the mortgage amount. So when we talk about how things are getting better, it's not like it's hugely better for everybody, right? It's better piecemeal. Some people are doing a lot better than others. And yes, I'm glad homes are selling. I look at my own neighborhood. There are houses that were on the market for 2 years that, poof, disappeared overnight. And then new houses came on, and within 60 days, those houses have sold. Another house down the block came on at a really good price. It was gone in a day and a half. Where are you in rebuilding your financial life? Where is your next job? Where is your next opportunity? Where is your next step? So it's always a good thing to go over my 5 rules for rebuilding America, because it's really rebuilding you, right? You've got to, number one, get yourself to ground zero. And by that I mean, where is your moment of truth? Where are you at the baseline where you can objectively look at where you've gone, where you can, with some sort of clarity, look at where you want to be? getting yourself to ground zero recognizes that there is a line in the sand that has to be drawn, and you have to step over that line, and you have to imagine your path forward. You have to visualize where you want to be. My second rule for rebuilding your financial life, rebuilding your own America, you've got to take the pain now. So once you recognize where you are and where you want to go, there may be a gap there. There may be some real pain that you have to take. If you have a house that is not in 20 years going to come out from being underwater, you have to take the pain now. You've recognized that fact. You've got to take the pain and go through the foreclosure process, go through the short sale process, get out from under this albatross so you can cross the line in the sand and move forward rebuilding your financial life. And there's no other way to do it. You've got to take the pain now. So you get yourself to ground zero. That's rule number one. You take the pain now. And number three is you must start making strategic decisions with your life, your financial life, your personal life, your work life. It's got to be strategic. It can't just be emotional. You can't get mad and pound on the table and say, no, 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 this is how it has to be. I don't want that. You shouldn't want that. You have to make strategic decisions about where you're going, or you're not going to be the smartest person you can be. You're not going to be able to rebuild with success. Because rebuilding requires a platform, and a platform requires strategy. Got to think about what it's going to take to where you want to be. It's not enough to recognize where it is, or even taking the pain now, unless you've got a strategic path to follow that wipes away the emotional decisions you make and focuses on the strategy. Now, whether you're buying investment property or you're buying a place to live or you're even going to be investing, whatever it is, right? Any buying decision, car, house, who knows? You need to put substantial cash down. This is my number four rule for rebuilding your financial life. Substantial cash. No more mortgaging your future. And I don't mean that you can't take out a mortgage, whether it's for investment property or it's something else. I'm totally fine with mortgaging something real, something like an appreciating asset. But you can't just go 100% in with the mortgage. You've got to put cash down. You've got to have skin in the game. Again, strategic decisions, right? Imagine you buy a car. Yes, you can buy a car with nothing down. But if you put cash down, it's a lot stronger place to be. It's a smaller loan at a lower interest rate, and there's less chance that you're going to need gap insurance and be underwater with that purchase. Finally, fifth rule, don't sign anything until you read every word. You've got to read. You don't read, you are not going to know what hidden dangers are out there. You just have to know. Read the documents. And if you don't understand them, take them to somebody who can help you, who can help you understand exactly the liability when you are signing those documents. Those are my five rules for rebuilding America, and I want you to follow them. If you want to invest in real estate, I want you to get a copy of my intentional investor webinar, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate, at thinklink.com. Go there, click on the red house. It'll take you through the steps you need to go. And within 5 minutes, maybe even two, you're going to be on your way to building a fortune in real estate. All right, stay tuned. We've got Rhonda Duffy with Real Estate Insight coming up next. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time here on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays with News Talk WSB. Follow me online at Glink on Twitter, at GLINK. It's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. Hey, Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So we've been talking the last few weeks about what a strong seller's market it is. Are people really able to sell as quickly as you're saying? I mean, I know the idea that you can sell in hours was something that we saw back in 2006. Is that realistic for people?
It is realistic. Sometimes it doesn't happen in hours. You know, a lot of times the buyers have to get their game plan together with their agent, or first what they do now is they drive by, then they tell their agent. I don't think buyers are totally as knowledgeable about this kind of market as they need to be. They still think they can come in and offer, you know, 60 cents on the dollar sometimes, or the sellers must be desperate, the buyers are king. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of pressure on buyers once they lose a house in a multiple offer situation, or the seller says, no, I've had too much activity, I'm not selling it for that. You know, so buyers are starting to straighten up and understand, hey, you know, I got to get this serious game plan in my head, and I've got to take action as soon as something comes on the market, because it may not be there. So can you sell your house right now? Absolutely, you can sell your house right now. Do we desperately need inventory? Yes, we do. When people call us now, we're like, thank you so much. We need your house desperately. And it's absolutely true.
Where are you getting your buyers from? Are they just are buyers just sort of waking up to the idea now that interest rates are still at historic lows, like, you know, 3 years after that started?
I think buyers have been out there and they've been cruising the internet this whole time. 3, 4, 5 years, I hear people have been looking on the internet. But I think across the board, most of the people feel that they're stable in their life. They've held a job for a while. They've got the money to put down. They've got, you know, historically low interest rates, and they've got a desire that's been pent up. And I think they've been, I mean, my numbers on the back of my websites, the numbers on these houses that we see, like, you've had 100,000 views on this property. They're huge numbers. And I just think everybody has been out there with pent-up energy.
All right. So I assume you'll put a few more tips on your website?
Sure, RhondaDuffy.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Rhonda. We appreciate it. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in a moment with more of the Elise Glink Show next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com at midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. I should have said this earlier, but happy Mother's Day, everybody. I hope that you are celebrating in good stead. 404-872-0750 is our number. The website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you are interested in investing in real estate, you could do no better than checking out my Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate webinar. It's instead of an event, we're actually doing a webinar. And if you click on the red house on my website, it'll provide you with all of the information you need. And if you still have more questions, you can always email me at questions@thinklink.com. I've got Ricky Novak with me today, and if you are a longtime listener, you know that he is a real estate attorney, and he is the head of Strategic 1031 Exchange Advisors, a 1031 company that you can use to do a 1031. So now that I've said 1031 six times, Ricky, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Elise. Happy to be here.
We should define what a 1031 is, and I'll let you do that since you're the expert.
Sure. You know, it's funny. I often hear people refer to 1031 as some kind of loophole in the tax code, and it's actually anything but a loophole. It's a provision in the tax code where the IRS has said that they want to incentivize taxpayers to buy and sell investment real estate. So under this term of the code, you actually can sell investment real estate, and as long as you follow the rules that the IRS has outlined for you, you can then go and buy new investment property, and in doing so, you defer all of your capital gains tax. So it's a wonderful way to preserve your equity in your real estate investments.
So in addition to deferring your capital gains tax, you also don't have to do the recapture, right?
Absolutely, and with, you know, the depreciation recapture becoming more and more cost prohibitive as the rates continue to go up, being able to defer both capital gains and depreciation recapture are a very, very strong financial tool.
That's very important. So when I called you the other day to ask if you wanted to be a guest on the show, you told me you were so incredibly busy. In fact, we couldn't even have lunch the other day because you were so busy.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, if you asked myself and my staff to close our eyes and tell you what year it was, I would swear to you that it's 2006.
Wow.
It really feels like things have heated up significantly in the real estate world, and 1031 certainly is feeling the effects of that increase in activity.
Are you seeing property prices go up? Are you seeing just more activity, buyers and investors unloading some properties and replacing them with others that might be longer-term properties? Are you seeing sort of single-family residential properties being swapped for commercial? What are the trends that you're seeing out there?
Sure, and there actually are a few trends that have been developing. Maybe I'll start with one of the most surprising trends, and that is there seems to be a significant uptick in activity involving what you would refer to as maybe second homes or vacation homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be very careful about how you use a vacation home, because if it's used primarily for personal use, it really doesn't qualify for an exchange. However, if you truly treat it as a rental or treat it as an investment, it does. We're seeing a significant increase in activity of beach property, mountain property, and lake property. So those highly amenitized properties that certainly nobody was looking at during 2008, 9, and 10. It seems like a lot of people now are putting their properties on the market. They're selling those properties, and they're still taking advantage of the fact that while maybe they have a gain in what they're selling, they still believe they can go and maybe buy a bigger, better property at a bit of a discount. So they're being opportunistic in their timing on selling and then trying to purchase replacement property before the market maybe gets a little too hot.
So I love that you said that, because I have this theory of doubling down in real estate. And in fact, I'm working on a story about it right now. I'm going to quote you when you just said that. But my theory is that there are people out there who have recognized that even if they lose a little bit of money now on a lower priced home, there's still an opportunity to buy a higher priced home at a steeper discount. And so let's say you have a house priced at $100,000, it's only worth $90,000 today. So you sell it for $90,000, you've lost $10,000. But you want to buy a $200,000 property. If that property is $180,000, right, that's a $20,000 discount versus the house you sold at a $10,000 discount. So there's kind of a net opportunity there to buy something at a steeper discount, or even if the rate of the discount's the same, it's a steeper dollar discount, and then as the market improves, that higher priced property will appreciate faster. So is that kind of what you're thinking is going on, maybe even in the reverse?
But we're definitely seeing that. I mean, as you can imagine, a lot of people are very sensitive to cash flow on their investment assets. I don't know too many investors that like to buy residential investment property and then have zero cash flow coming off of them. So oftentimes, you know, they may, as you mentioned, unload something where maybe they actually have a loss, but they're looking at doing, you know, looking at buying a new property where they have the perception of either maybe an increased velocity on a appreciation, or they believe that they can get significantly better cash flow opportunities. You know, it's also interesting to note, you mentioned selling a property at a loss. In many instances, our clients have been doing exchanges for years. So even though they may have bought a property, you know, in 2008 and paid, you know, call it $100,000 for it, their basis in that property could be significantly lower. So even if they bought it for $100,000 and they sell it for $90,000, and you say, well, gosh, you're losing $10,000. Well, for people that understand 1031 exchanges and have used them for years, that same client could have $40,000 or $50,000 of built-in gains in their property. So doing an exchange is still going to make sense for them.
That's a great point. You know, the thing that most people, I find, don't understand about 1031 exchanges is that you can do them over and over again. But we've been hearing from people, and I got this question the other day from someone who said that the day before closing, something happened in a 1031, and she missed her window of opportunity. And so I know that there are very, very specific, hard-edged time periods that you have to identify property. You've got to get that property purchased or sold within a certain period of time. Let's walk through that a little bit more specifically so people understand when they're thinking about using this what the dangers are. Because this woman wrote me and said, because of this lender mistake, I had to pay an extra $40,000 in tax I wasn't expecting to pay. Can I get the lender to kick in for that? Now, my feeling is no, you're not going to be able to. There's nothing you can force the lender to do. But I think people don't understand that risk.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point, Elise. You know, what you'll find with 1031 exchanges, while it is a very valuable tool, you do have some significant challenges that you have to face. The rules are very rigid. They're not very flexible. So some of those rules that are important are the timelines associated with 1031 exchanges. From the day that you sell, you know, the property that you sell, we usually refer to that as a relinquished property. So the day, from the day you sell your relinquished property, you have 45 days in which to identify your potential replacement properties. And so essentially that 45-day window is a very short period of time to identify what you might want to purchase. So one of the things we always recommend to our clients is go shopping well before you close on your relinquished property. Give yourself an extra month or so to be out there looking and identifying and potentially even putting something under contract before you even sell. So in other words, you may know that on June the 1st you're selling your relinquished property. Well, instead of only giving yourself 45 days, so basically into the middle of July to identify your replacement property, we tell clients, you know, come May 1st, start looking, be out there aggressively working with, you know, your real estate professionals to identify what you might want, because 45 days is a very short period of time. When you look at that rule, in addition to the 45 days, you have a total of 180 days to close on these properties that you identify. And so that 180 is inclusive of the 45, not in addition to. So with a 180-day window, once you get past your 45-day identification period, once you get to day 46, the list that you've provided to your qualified intermediary is the list that you have to live and die by. So it's very important to understand that if you identify one property and something happens where you don't get that property, your exchange is going to fail. So it's very important to understand 45 days to identify, 180 days to close, and once you get to day 46, whatever you've identified is what is on your list, and you can't change that list.
Now, you can do it in the reverse, right, where you can, this is like you're saying, sell, then identify, then you close, but you can also buy first and then close and do a reverse exchange, right?
That's correct. It's a phenomenal tool in one of two situations. The first situation is let's use the example again that we just went through. You have a plan to sell your property, your relinquished property, on June the 1st, and then you plan, you know, 15 days later to purchase your replacement property. Well, in some instances, sales fall through. We all know that, you know, there ends up being problems with title. There are plenty of problems that can rear their head during a real estate transaction. So what happens when your sale gets delayed, your relinquished sale gets delayed by 2 months because there's a title issue that needed to be cleared up? However, your replacement property still has to close and you can't delay that closing. So now you're in a situation where you have to buy before you sell. So that would be a great instance in which to use a reverse exchange. You know, the other instance is you just happen to find something that you can't live without and you have to close on it before you're going to be able to sell your relinquished property. So you're in a situation where if you want this property you found to be part of your exchange, you'll need to buy it before you're able to sell. In both instances, a reverse exchange would be the tool that you would use. It's a little bit different than a regular 1031 exchange in that you're a qualified intermediary, and, you know, that's what we are. That's what our firm does. We act as a qualified intermediary. We are a facilitator that works with clients that are looking to engage in these transactions.
And we should point out that it's a company. Your company is called Strategic 1031 Exchange Advisors. Sometimes real estate attorneys act as a 1031 exchange, like qualified intermediary, sort of separately, but you and I have talked for a long time about how that can raise some really significant problems with commingled funds, and it's really hard to know and all the rest.
Well, and, you know, quite honestly, I'm an attorney myself, and what I've noticed is, you know, if you don't perform these exchanges all day, every day as your core competency, you can be a bright attorney and still get these wrong. And we meet clients every day that worked with a good local attorney that maybe was their real estate attorney that they knew and they liked, and they do 1031 exchanges three or four times a year, and they therefore think they understand them.
Right.
And unfortunately, sometimes they make mistakes. So you need to be aware of the fact that you need an expert to help you handle these exchanges.
Right. It's important to do. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Ricky Novak. He's the head of Strategic 1031 Exchange Advisors. His website, SEA, like Sigma Elf, I don't even know, SEA1031.com. I'm not good with Greek letters today. We're going to take a short break. You are listening to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, here on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays here on News Talk WSB. I have Ricky Novak on the phone with me. He is with Strategic 1031 Exchange Advisors. We've been talking about how real estate investors, at least the really smart and savvy ones, will use a 1031 exchange to defer all capital gains tax and the recapture tax as well when they're buying and selling investment property. Ricky, we just have a minute or so left. When you think about mistakes that you're seeing people make right now, what are they? Are they paying too much for property? Are they doing the deals too fast? Where do you see mistakes happen?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I certainly believe that people need to take their time and do their diligence. There are still some phenomenal distressed real estate opportunities out there, but there can be complications when you're having to buy a distressed asset, whether it's a bank-owned asset or an asset where maybe the seller is in default on their bank loan. So you need to make sure that you really have worked, and I'm a firm believer that you definitely want good legal counsel that can help you work through those concerns so you don't find yourself in a situation where you end up buying something that is not what you thought you were getting. So I think that's important. The other thing is with 1031 exchanges, you know, it's a great tax deferral tool, but it's a tool. And what I mean by that is the business side of your decisions always needs to be your primary driver when you make those decisions. And every once in a while, clients get so focused on not paying tax that I've seen them make poor business decisions. You know, this piece of real estate, when you do an exchange, you're buying another investment asset, and you need to make sure that that asset makes sense for you from a long-term investment standpoint. So I would tell clients, while, you know, we would love to work with them and help them with a 1031 exchange, sometimes the best advice we can give a client is, you know what, you probably shouldn't do an exchange in this position because you're going to end up just buying something to buy, and that's usually not a good idea.
All right. If you've got questions about your 1031 exchange, well, you can ask Ricky. He's at Strategic 1031 Exchange Advisors, SEA1031.com. Ricky, thanks so much for joining us.
Elise, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure.
We'll talk to you again soon. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We will be back in a moment with more information. We're going to talk to Andy Heller, noted Atlanta real estate investor, in a few minutes. And you can always get more information at thinkglink.com. Stay tuned. Be right back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB. Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB, where we are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting, of course, with yours. All right, I'm going to give you all the website information. Thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you're there, click on the red house. Take a look at my brand new webinar series, Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. It covers everything you need to know about investing in real estate, taking you through step by step so that you're really smart when you go out and do it. Remember, it's a really big purchase. You want to not make mistakes. Just not making mistakes. Forget about even doing great things. If you just avoid mistakes, you're going to be way ahead of the game. You can also follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So I've got Andy Heller on the phone with me. And Andy, welcome back.
Thank you, Elise.
So Andy, if you are a longtime listener, you know that Andy is one of the great Atlanta residential and real estate investors. He's been out there with his partner for a really long time doing all sorts of buying and investing. And I thought it would be a good idea since we've been talking so much about investing in real estate, because so many of you are emailing me with great questions about investing, if Andy and I got together on the air and talked a little bit about what he's doing, what he's seeing out there in the marketplace, and some of his favorite places to pick up property. So, Andy, you know, I know a couple of years ago when we had you on one of our panels, you talked about going out and finding houses that you could basically buy for less than what you have in credit limit on your credit card. Are you still seeing that out there?
Not so much, Elise. The supply is tightening up, but I also say that, as you know, I believe the most attractive type of property that I find that I like to buy, Elise, is what I call middle-income properties. So the middle-income homes, even at the worst part of the downturn, you know, you could get them some good property at about a 40% discount. They're not one of the properties you could buy 20 cents on the dollar. I mean, that's really kind of the low-end property, and those are never types of properties that I was interested in. And you're not seeing as much of that activity now, even though that really isn't my space.
Mm-hmm. So you were buying it at about 40%. When you talk about middle-income property, do you think about $125,000 to $150,000 house?
Well, I go to a wider range. When I say middle-income, I should say, at least, middle-income means different things in every community. And in the Atlanta community, I would say from lower middle-income to upper middle-income, the range would be probably about $100,000 to $450,000. Now, I like to do lease options when I get the property. That's how I market the home. So the perfect range for the lease option would be kind of the middle part of middle-income, which is probably about $150,000. Retail value all the way up to about 300. That's my sweet spot.
So let's think about that for a moment. So a person who's earning $150,000 a year is making roughly what a month? I guess they're making about $10,000, $12,000 a month?
Something like that, yes.
Okay, and so at $12,000 a month after taxes, they've got about, I don't know, $7,000 to $10,000 a month to spend. And so what are you charging in rent on those properties? What are you getting it for, like $2,500 to $3,500?
Well, that's on the most expensive one would be $2,300. But my typical range is about $1,200 at least to $1,500. So as you can see, it's very affordable.
Very affordable.
Yeah. And I'm a big believer as a landlord, the way you make your money is by minimizing turnover. And I don't believe we should ever be greedy on our rents. Charge a fair rent. And I do a lease purchase, so it's kind of a premium product, but I'm at the high end of the rent range, but I'm never $300 or $400 above what I think is a fair rent. Because if you do that, you're kind of risking that you'll have turnover at some point, and that will quickly wipe out anything you earned.
So what I love, you've told a story about how you've had somebody renting the same property. I don't know if you still own it for like, how it was like 15 or 18 years they were in that property as a lease option. They never actually exercised the option.
We're at 21 years on that home. It's the second home we ever bought a lease with a bank-owned property. The original family's in there. The lease purchase even survived the divorce. We amended the lease purchase, and the husband took all responsibility when the wife moved out, and generally under a rental, that's never the case. The person who can't pay is always the one that stays. But that's why I like lease purchase so much, is that it's not just a rental. They're very engaged, very motivated, very connected to their property. And the option to purchase, the chance to be a homeowner, represents something a lot more than just a typical rental. So,
but it's been 21 years. But it's been 21 years.
It's been 21 years, and I don't know why he hasn't bought, and we continue to extend his right to buy. We certainly increased the price of the property, but it's still, if he ever buys it, it will be a good deal. And, you know, when you get to this point, at least a lot of these families, they don't buy, but they think they're going to buy, and the opportunity to buy and that dream of buying is always theirs, and it's their right, and we afford them that right. But it's that chance to be a homeowner, the idea in their mind that they're going to be a homeowner one day, which is why they stay that long. And that's a really interesting point. Your rental tenants, they just don't stay that long, typically.
Right. Well, it is, I got to say, an absolutely amazing opportunity for them. When you think about what it is that you're doing sort of day in and day out, and you've obviously been doing this at least for 21 years. I think probably 22 or 23 by this point.
Yeah.
When you think about what you're doing in the properties that you've sort of bought and sold over the years, I know you like these lease options, but what are some of the other things that you think you're doing right that somebody else might not be doing right? Because I know you do a lot of counseling for other investors. And frankly, everybody, if you want to talk to Andy directly, you can do it through RealtyJoin.com, which is a community for real estate investors and real estate agents and all the other vendors that you would need. It's a great thing. I'm part of it as well. Or at RegularRiches.com, which is his education site. What do you think you're doing right that other people don't always do right?
Well, can I answer your question with a great 3 or 4 minute story?
Sure. We've got 3 minutes exactly.
Well, good. And it's kind of a case study. Well, what I think I'm doing right that at the top of the list is I'm not dependent upon a certain outcome for my investment to work out. And your typical buy and flip investor, if an immediate buyer doesn't walk in, the buy and flip investor has to discount his or her property. The buy and hold investor, if somebody doesn't stay longer than 2 or 3 years, they get the turnover is going to eat up all their profits. So both of your core models have a flaw. And we bought a property recently, at least. We got a nice discount in Marietta. And we put it on the market for sale or lease purchase. It's always for sale or lease purchase. Okay, so the lease purchase is simply what we do with the property if we don't flip it. So along comes somebody who wants the home as a primary residence. They make an offer. We accept it. Then the home is inspected, and there's a counter $5,000 below our agreed-upon price. Now, typically when this happens under a buy and flip, the investor will either agree to the $5,000 because they already want to have this property sold, or they'll meet somewhere in the middle. So we did something really interesting, and it was still fair to the buyer and to us. We went back and said, look, there's no incentive for us to do this. The home is a good buy at the price we originally agreed to. We told you there were some issues with the property, so you didn't find anything that we didn't tell you initially. And if you decide you don't want to buy it, it's totally fine by us. We're just going to go ahead and lease purchase it to one of the applicants we're showing the property to. So, end of the story, lease. The home buyer said, fine, we'll take your price, and they bought the home. So I think it's a very powerful story, because the point is that here we are, we actually flipped the home. But the lease purchase was effectively a competitive buyer to this homeowner who wanted the property as a primary residence. And it kept us from having to discount our price, because there was always that threat that he would lose the property to this competitive lease purchaser that they have never met.
So it's interesting, because so that's great, because what you're doing is you have sort of a straw buyer in your pocket. These people, excuse me, who are going to rent from you or lease option from you, and it was enough to get the buyer to actually pay what you want instead of trying to nickel and dime, as buyers often do and sellers often cave, right? And the only way for sellers to not have to cave is to have another buyer, which many do these days, but sometimes they don't. So then buyers actually step it up. Did the property, are you having any trouble with your properties that you're selling, appraising out in value right now?
A few of them a few years ago, not recently. I mean, again, we have sales whenever we happen to have sales. We can go a year without having a sale. So we don't have them happening two or three a month where I could say that there's a real specific pattern. But I can say 2-3 years ago at least, the sales that we had around that time, the appraisals came in lower than what we would like. And that's what's great about a lease option. As long as you bought the property right, it's an option. So you just rip it up and write a new contract, sales contract, at a price that's fair. Because we bought the property at a discount, right, and so we end up making $30,000 instead of not making $50,000. But it's, you know, as you know, in real estate, the most powerful rule is you can't sell a property for more than it's worth. So, you know, you just work with the people and just be fair.
Right. It sounds like fair has gotten you a pretty long way.
It really has. But today we're starting to see the appraisals being covered. But in general, though, they're still lagging. They're lagging at least 60 to 90 days behind the market. And that is frustrating some potential buyers. They're going to reach an agreement with the seller. And this is in the retail market. Then they go and get the home appraised. And the appraisal doesn't cover because they're working off of data that is, you know, 60, 90 days old, when the market in some parts of the country is actually moving forward at a faster pace.
Yeah, which is for sure sort of amazing. Let's talk about Realty Joint for a moment. You started this, I want to say it's 6 years ago?
Oh, no, half that.
3 years ago. Okay, yeah. And how many people do you have now on this network?
Well, I prefer to think we kind of started it about 2 years ago, because the first year we kind of were working within a just a structure that really wasn't that good. We relaunched the site, as you know, Elise, and we're now up to we now have a third version of the site that launched just last month. We're almost at 11,000, and the more exciting part is people are really getting engaged, they're communicating, they're doing real estate transactions on the site, and it's kind of exciting to see. So we're growing at a respectable pace, and we're starting to get some organizations and some entities that are supporting us, not just individuals too.
Oh, that's great. So, as everybody knows, I've been a member and on Realty Join for all this time, and it's exciting to see it go in 11. I didn't even realize it was now at 11,000 real estate investors, agents, mortgage lenders, and from all over the country, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, not just over the country. We have some investors in Mexico, some in Canada, because they're joining Realty Join because they're wanting to connect with agents and mortgage brokers and investors here in the United States. So we're kind of now drawing an international crowd.
Wow. You've come a long way, baby, as they like to say. All right, we're going to take a short break. We're talking with Andy Heller, co-founder of RealtyJoin.com and owner of RegularRiches.com and a noted Atlanta real estate investor. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show on News Talk WSB, where we're rebuilding America one house at a time. Don't forget to check out my website, thinkglink.com. If you're a real estate investor, click on the red house. It'll take you to our new webinar series. Follow me on Twitter, @Glink, @GLINK. We're wrapping it up with Andy Heller here on the show today. So, Andy, what do you see happening going forward with the Atlanta marketplace? I get that question all the time. What are you seeing?
Well, right now things are tight, Elise, and there's a lack of inventory. And there's a whole bunch of reasons. We don't really have time to get into all the reasons why there's a lack of inventory, but there is some upward movement because of the lack of inventory. What's really interesting, and I'm still getting deals. Just in the last 3 months, we got really two great deals. So anybody who thinks you can't get deals in this market, that's completely incorrect. If you have the right sources, like we buy from some banks, we're still getting our deals. But I think what's really interesting, Elise, is to see what happens come fall. Because Atlanta, like some communities, it's really a spring and summer, early summer-driven market. Okay, so what happens in the fall? Is this upward movement in pricing, is that sustainable? Does that keep going? And if you look at our track record, at least, Scott and I have probably bought, I would estimate, between 65 and 75% of our properties. We bought them between August and February. So we get our deals when people are just not looking. So it's very interesting. To me, I don't know what the answer to the question is, but I'll be very encouraged for the direction of the U.S. economy and the housing market in general if this is continuing another 4 months from now. That's really what the question is.
So, in other words, if it's going to soften and we have a soft spring, not so good, and otherwise a very good one.
Yeah, well, or more so, the fall to me is the key. Because Atlanta in spring, summer, right now is the time when people are moving, they like to move, and now there's a lack of inventory. But come the start of the school year,
then you'll see exactly where we are.
That will be a really telling sign.
Sounds good. Andy Heller, co-founder of RealtyJoin.com and RegularRiches.com. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure. Calling time. Take care,
all right,
everybody.
Will. All right, stay tuned. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Happy Mother's Day again to everybody who's tuning in. Delighted that you could be here. I am spending my Mother's Day with my mother and my sister, who is also a mom. And what we usually do on Mother's Day is I plant my baskets. Well, they're not baskets. They're these huge flower things that line the driveway. And hopefully the weather's going to stay warm enough and dry enough that I can do that. Okay, let's see if we can get to some calls this last half hour of the show. Lewis joins us on the line. Hey, Lewis, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
It's nice to have you. So what's going on in your world today?
Well, you know, I have two homes. I live in one. The other one I rented out. The tenants just left last month, and I have a lot of stuff that I have to kind of repair and work out before I can have another happy tenant there.
All right. Well, let's go back. Let's go back a little bit. So you live in one house, and now you don't have tenants in the other. Did you try to rent out the property while the tenants were still there?
No, they all of a sudden just wanted to leave, and I we didn't. They didn't want to sign a contract. They just decided not to sign a lease on it, and then I didn't get anybody else. But the house needs so much work. And the
well, what is it?
Under.
What does it need? What does the house need?
Oh, the bathroom. You know, the doors. I don't know what he did. He messed up a lot of the hinges on the doors, and the frames have to be changed.
He messed up the. Hold on a second. He messed up the hinges on the doors?
Yeah, the frames. The hinges are pulled off. He tried to fix it, and he had a son that was kind of young and autistic, and he said that his son swung on all the doors. Five of them were messed up.
Wow.
And the kitchen floor is laminate. He spilled juice. The kids spilled juice all over the house. Laminate floor in the living room, in the kitchen, is swelled up. It's messed up.
Did you take a security deposit for this?
Yes, I did take the security deposit.
And have you kept it?
Did I what? I'm sorry?
Have you kept the security deposit? It
yes.
Sounds like you're going to need it for fixing
yes,
up this
I
house.
Mean, I kept it, but, you know, there's a lot of little things that need to be done to the house, actually, for somebody to go in there and be happy again renting it.
All right, so
and,
what's the plan?
It's worth it. I'm sorry?
You don't know if it's worth it to fix up the house?
Yeah, I don't know. My question to you is, should I short sell the home? The neighboring homes are sold for like $45,000, $50,000. I paid $125,000 for this house.
Oh, wow.
In 2005. And, you know, and I'm jobless right now.
And you're unemployed.
So,
when did you lose your job?
About 6 months ago.
Wow. And what's going on with that?
Well, that's been really difficult, too, because I haven't been able to find the work that I do. There hasn't been a whole lot of that. And for me to go work for half of what I get paid someplace else and be stuck there would be kind of difficult. So I'm using my savings right now and probably looking into starting my own business. And hopefully that would work.
All right. So how many businesses do you actually need to be in at the same moment? This is the real question of your life right now, because when I talk about rebuilding your house, your financial house, and I talk about getting to ground zero, your ground zero is you don't have a job, you have no money coming in, you've got a house that you live in that you're paying for, a house that is an investor house that's way underwater that you're paying for, that you don't have a tenant for. And you've got $6,000 of repairs to do to the property to get it ready to go. Is that the ground zero for you?
Pretty much.
That's overwhelming. Are you sleeping at night?
I just bought some melatonin last night to see how that works for me. It helps me sleep better.
Yeah, I can imagine, because I can't imagine you're getting much sleep with all the stuff that's going on here. This is really tough. And understanding how to piece it together in a way that makes sense is also tough. So let's try and unpack it a little bit, because when you pile everything on, that mountain seems even higher than it actually is. And I can feel like that mountain is like Mount Everest as it is all on its own.
Yes, it is.
If you are going to short sell the house, it's going to be about 6 months. You'll need to stop making the payments. And then you're going to have to do, because you're not going to have enough money to do it, you're going to be spending your savings, and I'd rather you spend your savings to start your business. But it will hurt your credit. And if you're starting a business and you need good credit to get a line of credit for something, you're not going to have it. So that's a real problem. Is the business you're looking at starting, is that actually going to require credit?
It may, along the line, it will, but I'd rather use my savings for that than for this home. This
I 6, agree.
000. You know, and so my the thing is, I don't, you know, of course I'm concerned about my credit because I have good credit, But I want to get to work as quick as I could and start making money.
Sure, because that's really the way to fix everything up. Is the $6,000 of work actually what it would cost you to hire somebody to do it, or is it the cost of the raw materials? Because if you're unemployed, you may be able to spend the time to replace the doors and the hinges, for example,
rather than
hiring somebody to do that work.
Well, I do all that work. I can do all that work. It's not my line of work, but I have a knack for it. I can do all that work. I mean, the master bathroom tub has to be replaced, so that's another thing. The floor in the bathroom, just stuff, a lot of the stuff in there is kind of old, and for somebody to move in there and be happy, I feel that these things have to be changed. It's probably about $3,000 in material, and I'm adding another $3,000 in my labor.
Okay. Well, so we don't count the labor because you don't. So it's $3,000. And at $3,000, if you do the work, can you get a tenant in there who's going to cover your bills?
Probably, yes.
Probably. Okay. So then that's the calculation you have to make. Do you want to just do the work over the next couple of weeks, get a tenant in there, and stop worrying about this rental property? Because if what you do instead is you don't fix it up and you do a short sale, it's going to impact your life over a very long period of time. And because this is a rental property, not your personal property, if it sells for, let's say, $100,000 less than what you paid for it, the IRS is going to come after you for that money because this is not an owner-occupied property. This is a rental property. And so you will owe taxes on the imputed income. That means phantom income, right? You don't want to deal with that.
No, I don't.
So the $3,000 is a much better investment than having to pay tax on a phantom $100,000 of income that you don't have. So,
well, I'm glad I called.
I'm really glad you called. So that's the first piece of this. You're going to, so you now know you need to take $3,000 in material, get this work done in the next few weeks, fix up the house, rent it out. And make sure that you have enough of the security. And you have some money in the security deposit to cover this. So just cover some of whatever you can. Use your cash for the rest. Get it done in the next few weeks. All right. Set that aside. That's now taken care of. Now we have to figure out your business. So you're going to start this business. And do you have a plan for getting income from it? And do you have a plan for making this work?
Yes, I've just started researching, and I have somewhat of a plan already drawn out, and, you know, I know where I have to start to actually start that.
So while you're spending the next couple of weeks fixing up your house, what I want you to do is take the plan that you have, 1, 2, 3, and make sure that you start implementing some of the plan, because while you're fixing things up, it always takes time for work to bubble up. And whatever it is you're going to be doing, I want to make sure that you can actually get the bubbling up process going while you're doing something else, fixing up the rental property, so that when you're done with the rental property, you are ready to dive in and make money in this new place, in this where this new business is.
Yeah, that's been, you know, I'm trying to juggle everything. I didn't even mention I'm a single dad, which is very difficult, too.
Oh, my goodness. It's like you're burying the lead. Of course that's important.
Yeah.
Do you have any backup for being a single dad? Do you have any backup with your child?
Not a whole lot.
No family in town and friends who can help out?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's hard to burden people. And, yeah, you know, everybody's got their time and they have to be at work and they have to do the things they have to do. So, it's a little difficult, but I've been managing so far, and I need to do something where I don't have to work 9 to 5 and have my own schedule for my son.
Right. Well, you sound like an incredibly thoughtful dad, and being a single father is a really being a single parent, I don't care whether you're a dad or a mom, is an incredibly hard job. You've got to be both parents to your child and make them understand that they're still the center of your universe, even though all these other things are going on. So it's not an easy job. The next month and a half is going to be critical. And the thing to remember is just tell your is it a son or a daughter?
a son.
Just tell your son every day you love him, and you're working hard to do the best you can for him. And
yeah, he's incredible.
I'm sure he is. It sounds like he is the light of your life.
He is.
That's great. So remember that whatever pain you're going through now, you're at your ground zero, you're taking your pain now. This little boy is the light that you're building all of this for. And by rebuilding your life, you're going to rebuild his life as well. And it's going to be a lot better 6 months from now than it is today. It's going to be just a whole lot of work. But I know that in 6 months, this is all going to resolve for you. The house will be rented. That'll be off your plate. Business will be going. That'll be off your plate. And I don't want you to feel like you can't ask some of your closest friends to help you out a little bit as you go through the next month and a half. Because you're going to need that backup. And then when you're in a better place, 6 months down the line, you can return the favor. And believe me, they will all be delighted to take you up on it. But this is your time where you're going to need some extra help. So I want to make sure that you get the help you need so that you're able to go forward and rebuild, Lewis.
Well, thanks for the advice. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I thought I was going to be at. But just wanted to get a little advice on that. And you know, I didn't know that the IRS could have got me.
Yeah, the IRS could get you. It's a big bite because this is not an owner-occupant. You'd have to move into this house as your own, and maybe that's an answer for you. Move into this house, rent out the house that you're currently living in, which is already in better shape, and then you fix up this one while you're living there. That is another option. But whichever way you go, you've got to put in the work to get this house into livable shape. And if you and your son can live in this house, sticky floors and all, and rent out the other one and make more money that way and cover your back with this one, even if it's temporary, even if it's just for the next year, that may be the best way to go. All right? Let me know what happens.
Okay.
Thank All right.
You so much.
Thanks for calling, Lewis. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Mother's Day, I am getting ready to go and be with my mother and my sister. I wish my other sister was in town. She's not. It's a great day to do something nice for the mom in your life. And if you don't have a mom anymore, but you have an aunt, you have a really good female friend who's a mom particularly, this is a great day to wish them a happy Mother's Day. So I got an email. I just want to go over this email because it's from Phil. And he wanted to know, he wants to do an FHA streamline refinance. And I get this question quite frequently at questions@thinklink.com. Because a lot of people now have FHA loans. It used to be FHA loans were like 5% of the marketplace, and now they're like 20-25% of the market. So a lot more people have FHA loans, and they need to know what it is that they can do with them. And they want to do a streamlined refinance. And Phil wanted to know where he could go to find an honest lender to find an FHA streamlined refinance. So if you go to HUD.gov, right, that is the portal for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. You go to HUD.gov, and in the search bar, type in FHA Streamline Refinance. You'll come up with a page that says Streamline your FHA Mortgage. And Streamline Refinance refers only to the amount of documentation and underwriting that the lender performs. Very, very little. It does not mean there are no costs involved in the transaction, but they're typically just a few hundred dollars, not several thousand dollars. You should contact your own lender to see what that lender can do for you. But there may be other lenders who can help you as well. But start with your own lender. Try to get that lender to help you out. And if you want, on HUD.gov, there'll be a list of other approved online lenders as well. All right? So go to HUD.gov and type in FHA Streamline Refinance. Okay, it is time to call it a show. I am online, Think glink.com, THINKGLINK.com. Follow me on Twitter at glink, at GLINK. Don't forget to click on the red house on my website. If you are investing in real estate, you must watch The Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. That is my webinar, my gift to you, for those of you who are looking to invest in property right now, the very best time, or I should say the end of the very best time ever, to buy investment real estate. Happy Mother's Day, everybody, and have a great week.
.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.